Western warmongers have all the answers and they're all wrong. The wars in Libya, Iraq and Afghanistan failed not because of noble errors, but because short-sighted Western interests trumped the needs of the people. And this is why the creeping return to war will fail again. Dr. Nafees Ahmad, an investigative journalist and international security scholar, has written an informative article on this issue. Stay with us for more. Despite an almost total lack of public debate, Western military escalation in Iraq, in Afghanistan and Libya is on the rise. Renewed military interventionism has been justified as a response to the meteoric rise of ISIS networks, spreading across parts of the Middle East, North Africa and Central Asia. Missing from government pronouncements, though, is any acknowledgement that the proliferation of ISIS terrorism is a direct consequence of the knee-jerk response of military escalation. Discarded to the memory hole is the fact that before each of the major interventions in these three countries, the Western political leaders promised they would bring security, freedom and prosperity. Instead, they have done precisely the opposite. In October of 2001, as US Special Forces were roaming Afghanistan in the search for Osama bin Laden, a senior fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations, Max Boot, wrote a gushing article in the Weekly Standard titled "The Case for American Empire." Max Boot said, "Afghanistan and other troubled lands today cry out for the sort of enlightened foreign administration once provided by self-confident Englishmen in Jodhpurs and pith helmets. Occupation would be a temporary expedient to allow the people to get back to their feet until a responsible, humane, preferably democratic government takes over. Is this an ambitious agenda? Without a doubt. Does America have the resources to carry it out? Also, yes, without a doubt. 15 years into the war in Afghanistan, it is patently clear that this imperial dream is nothing more than a self-soothing fantasy. President Barack Obama has reneged on a promise to withdraw US troops and will instead keep 9,800 there in 2016. And has said that at least 5,500 will remain in the country indefinitely. The Taliban, far from being destroyed, is resurgent like never before. ISIS is now active in Afghanistan and its reach is growing. Billions have been invested in this failed long-haul military effort, whilst the economy, infrastructure and basic public services remain underdeveloped, broken and ineffective. Instead, in the name of promoting democracy, the West has cynically supported fraudulent elections, endemic corruption and warlord cronyism. According to the new Human Rights Watch World Report 2016, under the US-backed so-called democracy in Afghanistan, little progress was made in reining in abusive militias, reducing corruption, promoting women's rights, and reforming the courts. Human Rights Watch's senior Afghanistan researcher Patricia Grossman said, "Doctors have been all too willing to ignore abuses taking place rather than using their influence with the government to end the abuses." Blaming the troop withdrawal itself for the failure of US counterinsurgency operations earlier this month, a senior fellow at Council on Foreign Relations, Max Boot, proclaimed that "Afghanistan is not lost even now. A greater US commitment can still save the democratic government in Kabul and stop a Taliban takeover." But what is going on in Kabul? Max Boot conveniently ignores that the acceleration of the Taliban's insurgency did not begin under Obama, but intensified under the Bush doctrine. Between 2002 and 2006, the number of insurgent attacks increased by 400%, and the number of deaths from these attacks increased by more than 800%. Between 2005 and 2006, improvised explosive devices or IED attacks more than doubled from 783 cases to 1,677 cases, and armed attacks nearly tripled from 1,558 cases to 4,542 cases. From 2006 to 2007, insurgent attacks increased by a further 27%. Neither Bush nor Obama have shown much interest in addressing one of the key material causes behind the Taliban insurgency. Similarly, Washington Post veteran David Ignatius was one of the most ardent cheerleaders for the 2003 Iraq invasion, which he described as the most idealistic war fought in modern times, a war whose only coherent rationale for all the misleading hype about weapons of mass destruction and Al-Qaeda terrorists is that it toppled a tyrant and created the possibility of a democratic future. It was a war of choice, not necessity, and one driven by ideas, not merely interests. David Ignatius also criticized commentators who wrote darkly about America's designs on Iraqi oil or a conspiracy to enrich Vice President Cheney's old friends at Halliburton. It would be nice in a weird way if the Iraq war were anchored to such worldly interests, but it isn't. He went on to write an astonishingly glowing portrait of one of the war's chief architects, then Pentagon war planner Paul Wolfowitz. Never mind that the US State Department and the British Foreign Office files proved unequivocally that opening up Iraq's considerable oil resources to global markets was a major strategic goal of the 2003 invasion of Iraq, or that Dick Cheney's Halliburton made $39.5 billion from the war, largely from no-bid contracts. No, despite that, Ignatius claims he admits his support for the war was a mistake because the war itself was just a mistake, but he remains strangely unable to this day to acknowledge the neoconservatives' worldly interests behind the war. Despite that, the Washington Post veteran David Ignatius still thinks himself qualified to advocate solutions to the rise of Islamic State across Iraq and Syria. In Iraq, he thinks the solution is obvious, calling for a more military intervention to empower certain insurgents to fight ISIS, a prescription that ignores how Al-Qaeda in Iraq arose directly in response to US surge, which empowered certain tribes, many of whom had previously fought alongside Al-Qaeda in the first place. Meanwhile, the US has built up 3,700 boots on the ground in Iraq, and the Pentagon is complaining that more soldiers are needed. On Syria, David Ignatius suggests that the Atlantic and the United States should consider working with Al-Qaeda's branch in Syria, Jabhat al-Nusra, to undermine ISIS. He says this might help the US build a strong so-called moderate opposition, paving the way for violent regime change in Syria. Washington Post veteran David Ignatius went on to claim that the shattered nation can gradually be stabilized if the United States and its allies seriously commit to building a new Syrian force that can help fill the vacuum post-Assad. He also added that the US will need to work with people from the incumbent Baathist establishment, fostering an opposition that can merge with acceptable elements of the Syrian army to manage a transition from President Assad. Conveniently absent from his tragic tale of America's feeble, weak, and feckless approach is the US role in deliberately fostering the terrorists, a process that David Ignatius blames solely on US allies such as Saudi Arabia, and various Persian Gulf states and Turkey. Never mind that Barack Obama's former Pentagon intelligence chief Michael Flynn has confirmed that the Pentagon anticipated the rise of an ISIS-type entity in Iraq and Syria as a direct consequence of U.S. support for Syrian terrorist groups. He said that the support was funneled through the U.S. allies, the Persian Gulf states and Turkey. And unsurprisingly, Ignatius seems oblivious to the inherent contradiction in calling for a political solution jointly brokered by United States, Russia, Iran, Turkey and Saudi Arabia, whilst demanding that the US, Saudi Arabia and Turkey accelerate their war drive to topple President Assad, backed by Iran and Russia. Sadly, this sort of nonsense is routinely regurgitated by defence think tanks and policy groups on both sides of the Atlantic. The presence of ISIS terrorists in Libya is a direct consequence of the NATO strategy that certain pundits championed. Now, the British Prime Minister David Cameron plans to dispatch 1,000 British troops to lead a US and EU 6,000-strong coalition to stop religious fighters from consolidating their control of a dozen of Libya's major oil fields. The sad truth is that a significant portion of the pundit class that keeps trying to tell the public that and government what to do are clueless, and their ludicrous track records prove it. In Iraq, Afghanistan and Libya, insurgencies has been a direct product of a toxic combination. That is, United States and Britain led military interventions, occupations, withdrawals, recalibrations, and on the ongoing $1 billion of support for the very groups that Western forces are fighting by US and UK allies like Saudi Arabia, Turkey and Pakistan, amongst other states. The fundamental reason the wars in Iraq, Afghanistan and Libya failed is not because of noble errors, but rather because in all three cases, short-sighted Western interests trumped the needs of long-oppressed local populations. And this is why the creeping return to war will fail again, a matter that influential regional countries like Iran has always insisted, calling for political solutions whilst emphasizing that the fate of those countries should be determined by the people themselves.